Okay, welcome to another episode of Forever Bristol City podcast. Well, Watford went into this game, no wins in four. We went into it, no losses in three. And you know what the outcome was? Because it finished Watford 2, City 0. For my part, I've seen City play worse and actually win. But a scoreline doesn't lie. And City, even now, that top half of the table is looking a little bit of a stretch when you look at the remaining games. Joining me are my regular cohorts on here, Mark and Ian, as I normally do with you guys. If you can just, you first, Mark, give me 30 seconds reflective look on the game. Over to you.
Generally, City play well against potentially much classier opponents, 62% possession, and some of the best chances, and were just let down by poor finishing, a great goalkeeper in Daniel Backman, and the woodwork. The two goals that we conceded were poor, but there were lots of bright spots, including the introduction of Alex Scott in the second half, and one of his moves, he took out three players, was a joy to behold. So, shame we lost, but lots of bright spots there. And on to Sheffield United, another tough game on Tuesday.
Ian, do you share Mark's enough bright spots there? I mean, I said we've played worse and won matches this season, but what's your view in summary?
Yeah, I think that's as well as we've played all season away from home over 90 minutes. The only time I felt we lost the plot a little bit is those final two substitutions, that, you know, the one where Viner went off because he had a bit of a minor groin niggle, according to Nigel Pearson. So, I was happy enough with the performance. It's that lack of, it's that nearly man thing. It's the lack of a cutting edge in the penalty area. Not the final third. We got enough, where we created enough chances. I can talk you through the two goals later on, but first one was a circus. Second one went much better.
An error.
Max half threw it in the net. I mean, I don't know whether he was unsighted, but no, I mean, all in all, we a good performance. I thought strong performances from our midfield. And if you would have told me at the start of the season with their parachute payments that we'd go up to Watford and have 62% possession, which is probably worked against us a little bit because we don't tend to win games when we haven't got a lot of possession, when we've got too much possession.
Yeah.
But we had 11 shots, 6 on target. We got 7 corners, all more than them. And we gave away less fouls. So, you know, you can't say it wasn't a positive performance, but unfortunately, it's about goals. And we didn't, and not for the first time this season, we didn't get the goals that our performance deserved.
No.
Yeah, and against such a low tempo Watford side, they were almost, I wouldn't say nonchalant, but they allowed us. Well, I just did. Yeah, they were happy to defend, but there were just no intensity to their play at all. They relied heavily on João Pedro and Issy Sarr. I think they benefited from bringing Kone on for Bakuna in the second half, but I think that was frustrating. The Watford were just so poor, and you know, Wilder's going. It's not an ideal situation.
He's not going to be there. He won't be there.
No, it's just but it's like a side resigned to their fate as, you know, a mid-table team. They should be getting in the playoffs. But they, you know, and I think that's the most frustrating thing today, the fact that we had the opportunity to beat them, and we just didn't put the ball in the back of the net. Because like Ian said, there was plenty in the final third, but we needed to be sharper. And the same thing's going to happen up at Sheffield United. You've got to take your chances when they come.
I watched them against I watched a bit of Sheffield United against Cardiff, not a lot. And somebody, I think it was El Davido on Twitter, put O'Dowd didn't look interested, so I put nothing new there then. But equally, some of the comments that came out were that Sheffield United didn't look all that, but they still whacked 4 past Cardiff, who, you know, look like they're only not going to go down because of the tumbling QPR and the fact that Wigan and Blackpool are cut adrift. All right, let's get into the...
A point about Watford. I mean, Watford are only 3 points off sixth place. They might, you know, they might be in 12th position, but they're only 3 points off sixth place. So, you know, I wouldn't write them off with the players they got. And they have had a lot of problems with injuries, but I would agree the general tempo of their performance was very low key.
Yeah. Well, if you look at all three relegated sides here, and I'm looking at the league table now, Norwich, West Brom and Watford, they're all nestled there. There's four games to go. West Brom have got a game in hand on all of them. Four games to go. But realistically, those four are looking for that sixth slot. Yeah, because Millwall in fifth, they're on 65. Norwich are on 61. So, you know, they've got to win two out of four at least and hope that you know, Millwall Coventry's results are lesser. Mark, coming back to you with the lineup, it was the same team, wasn't it? It was just one change on the bench, which was Wood dropping out for Alex Scott to come back in. There was no surprise that he stuck with the same side, really, was there?
No, and that was the team that it's a settled team, settled shape that did well for the majority of the game against Middlesbrough. So I had no problem with that, with James and King, at the base of our midfield. Although in the first half, it did tend to pass Andy Vyman by a little bit, playing in front of that. But no, we just haven't got the bodies. I think the one thing that came out of Nigel's presser this week, which was quite interesting, is that Joe Williams is back on the grass. Maybe he'll get some minutes and maybe in the last couple of games, you know, being back on the grass means that you're still, a couple of weeks away at least. So maybe we will see him at the end of the season, either in the QPR game or the Burnley game. Touch wood, but we've got hardly any cover. I mean, the next, on midfield, you got Omar Taylor-Clark waiting in the wings, and he didn't get on today. But there's just a lack of bodies there, so the team picks itself still, doesn't it? Really?
Well, you say that, but I mean, you got a half fit Naismith. Try saying that quickly. Half fit Naismith and Scott.
Well, that's why he's on the bench.
Both coming on. Yeah. I mean, you know, but then James and King, I guess they're players that are in the, in King's case, twilight of their career. Anyway, let's get into the action. It was a good start. I mean, we got an early shot away. We got a corner. I think it was Toby doing the commentary said it's a good start. And then, Ian, we had this free kick routine, which was a complete and utter cluster, you know what. And I tweeted at half-time, effectively that goal emanated from that free kick routine. Give me your thoughts on that free kick routine and then take us through the goal, which you described as a circus. And I'll come to you, Mark, as well, but you first, Ian. The free kick routine, which I thought indirectly led to the goal.
Yeah, we gave the ball away high up the field, trying to be a little bit, trying to overplay and be a little bit too clever. And the ball breaks up the field. They get a free kick.
Good one by Tanner, wasn't it? Got his body there. I mean, that was taking one for the team, wasn't it? Because it was closer than that he got booked later, wasn't it? Yeah.
The referee said, well, that's your second one, so you're having a yellow. No problem with that. But their goal, I mean, we don't pick up the runner from the free kick. So they play the free kick. And instead of crossing it into the box aimlessly, they pick out a runner who's made a clever run off the back of whoever was marking him.
Jay De Silva
didn't follow him. Then we had two or three players around him and he was still allowed to cross the ball and it ran through. Now, Cam Pring was under no pressure whatsoever. So he could have stopped the ball with his left foot, looked up and smashed the ball out of play if he needed to on our right side. Instead of that, he tried to clear it through a ruck of players and has hit Cornick and gone in. So that was three or four lots of, well, that was at least two, three lots of bad defending in one goal. I mean, it was a circus, that goal.
Yeah, Mark, I mean, that free kick routine, it almost worked, didn't it? And that was the thing about City, it almost came off, yeah? And, you know, we didn't get a chance to use it again. But do you agree with me? And I think Ian does to a point that, you know, we lost possession, we conceded the free kick. I think I not disagree with Ian. I'm trying to think back to the goal, which I've seen numerous times, and Pring's body position, it wasn't on his left foot. So to clear it with his left foot, he'd have to have turned 270 degrees and hit it the opposite way to what he did. Whereas what he did do, he drove it back in to the penalty area, hence it going in off corner, which is a bit harsh on our striker.
With his left foot.
With his left, that's what I mean. It was he hit it with his left.
Well, what did he couldn't control it with his left foot?
Yeah, he just lashed at it. He lashed
and then kick it out on the the opposite wing.
Yeah. What did you think? What did you think, Mark? What were your thoughts?
Well, it goes wrong at the start because Loser plays what is a blind pass with his left foot to the edge of the area, and Sarr's allowed to trap the ball on the turn. He's got the Silva and the Silva's on his left, Voigtmans on his right. He's still able to trap the ball and cross it between them. Neither of them blocks it. They've got their hands behind their back. They don't want to try and handle it, but he's able to pass it across the goal. I mean, if Pring really rushes it, he's got time to stop it almost, and he could have played it out. But yeah, he just turns and hits the ball into Cornick. And it's a poor goal, but really we fell asleep and we let Sarr run. It was Pedro,
Mark, I think, not Sarr.
It was Pedro then, yeah. Pedro on the right side.
And it was Jay that lost him. Jay was training.
Yeah, well, him and Byman were there, and he was able to trap the ball and drive it across the box. But then, Pring, he just hacks at it, and it's hit the wrong way. Them's the breaks. But to lose the ball in transition after we're attacking, I mean, it's happened before, and then to go back down, to lose 70 yards... it's a big risk, but it was just an awful goal to concede when we started off really well.
Yeah, no, we did. And Ian, we did play well. I've got chances on the 12th and 17th minute. Jay, he didn't look like he had his afterburners in today, but he put in that cross. Cornick did well with a header at the near post. And then Bell, he put in a cross, and Wells had a header taken under the bar by Backman. I mean, those were, I wouldn't call them missed. They're not misses. It's just they didn't go in today. On another day, they might have done both of them. Would you agree with that, Ian?
Well, the first one that Cornick headed, where he headed it down, that was a good header. And Backman's made a really good save from De Silva's cross, I think that was.
Yes, right. Yeah.
The one that Naki did, you'd have saved that because he's more or less lobbed it with his head. And if Backman had let that in, he needed shooting. Yeah. So, no, I think the best saves Backman made was that one from Cornick, because that was a firm glancing downward header. Yeah. And the one from Wells with the shot with his left foot in the second half, although I still don't think he hit it quite hard enough. But it was a good save.
Yeah. Mark, Max has had his critics, and he's had his people who praise him. We praise him because he's done, he's done lots of good work. But I say it was end to end. It was an open game at times. But on 24 minutes, Chowdhury to Sarr, he was allowed time to put in a shot, parried away by Max. You know, he likes to do those punches, doesn't he? Yeah.
I think it was just strong palms. I mean, it was good play by Chowdhury, parried into the right channel, flicked it back, and it opened it up for Sarr. I mean, Max holds his position at his near post and blocks it. He's got good strong hands and pushes it out for a corner. I've got no problem with that. A good save.
Yeah, Cornick redeemed himself last week with the goal and assist, but he did one wayward pass, because we do have a habit of giving the ball away, and it was just on the half hour when... he let Pedro in. He got a lucky let off there. But then Viner, he did a good tackle on Sarr as he threatened to break down Jay's side, came across well. But Ian, City had a chance to get that equaliser just before the break, and it was a corner. Do you think Pring should have done better? Because he was down the other end of the pitch this time, and he just didn't do anything with it, did it? When he seemed to have space, and it was the right body position for him. How did you see that?
Well, he should have headed it, just kept it in play and headed it across the 6-yard box. I don't know what he did in the end, but it was almost like a defensive header. You know, that's maybe why we are where we are, and why, in great respect to Cam, I think he's a really good player, but why he's a defender and not a forward. But no excuses. He's a good enough player to have headed that back across the 6-yard box, where one of our players or one of their players might have deflected it into the net.
Yeah. But on our first half performance, you'd agree, Ian, well worth being level at halftime, because it wasn't a bad half for us, really.
I thought we should have won the game. I mean, there's no two ways about it, but you've got to score goals. And it's pointless being in a situation where, you know, you create the chances, but you don't stick the ball in the back of the net. But that's football, and it happens. Yeah. And like you said earlier on, other game, we've played worse than that in other games.
And we've won.
Got a win out of it. If you think about it, I think we played better today than when we played away at Preston and we won 2-1. I mean, we could have easily drawn or lost that game at Preston. So it's just football. It's how it goes. Sometimes the ball just doesn't go in the net. And I've over the years, and you would have definitely seen it as well, and I can remember games where we've been absolutely battered from start to finish and won 1-0.
Yeah.
And when we've done that to other teams and lost 1-0. So that's just how football goes.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get into the second half. Mark, again, we started with a flourish. Vyman to Wells, great shot. He got that shot away, well saved. Ian alluded to that one. And then Bell put in a cross. And that, well, in fact, it was all in one movement, really, wasn't it? That there was a save, and then the ball ended up going across to Bell. He put the cross. And Wells, again, he had two chances, and his header glanced off the post and went the wrong side, i.e. back into play, rather than in. Again, do you call those missed chances? Because it's not, you know, he doesn't deliberately try and hit the post. Yeah, it just didn't go in, and it was a good save. So is it missed chances or opportunities that went away? How do you see those two?
I think it's just, you know, when you get those chances, you've got to put them in. That's the difference between a decent side and a side that are challenging for promotion. You've got to be sharper when you get them. I mean, Wells was in some great positions today, a bit unlucky. I mean, the cross came in. I think it was Vyman did really well down the right. It was deflected to him, and he hits the first one. And like the Cornick header, it's behind Bartman, but he gets very strong hands to it. And then Sam Bell stands the ball back up to the back post, and he heads it down well, but it's hit the base of the post. I mean, there was a linesman's flag. I don't know if he was flagging against Cornick, who was in an offside position, thinking perhaps the ball brushed Cornick on the way through, because it didn't touch him. So yeah, Wells was unlucky there, but you've got to score in those positions, and we didn't, and that's just
we paid for it. Ian, they in the early stages of the game, they were mocking, rather stupidly, I thought, the fact that Keenan Davis wasn't getting a touch. Yeah, and you know, Toby actually corrected himself and said, I shouldn't really say that because he'll probably go and score now. But Keenan Davis had a shot that was deflected wide when it looked like it was going to go in. But we were linked with him at some stage, Ian, weren't we? That a striker. And do you think he's the sort of bloke that would make a difference to us up front? I didn't see much in him today, did you?
Well, the last time he played against us, he was playing for Forest, and he smashed Callis to pieces, and he caused us loads of problems. So it could just be an issue of service. If you're playing up front and you're getting lousy service, you know, not the right crosses, not the right balls into your feet. Yeah, he looks a decent player to me. But when you're playing in that number nine role, I mean, he seems to be able to hold the ball up. He holds it up well when it's played into his feet, and he's a big unit. So I wouldn't mind getting him on loan as a nine. He didn't have a brilliant game today, but when he played for Forest, it was probably one of the last games Callas played before he disappeared. Because I know we brought Robbie Cundy on to mark him second half, and Robbie Cundy marked him out of the game.
Yeah.
But
interesting. Interesting you talk about Robbie Cundy, because, you know, everybody said, oh, we made a mistake letting him go. But Barnsley, who won, I think, 4-1 or something at Forest Green today, sent them down. He's not even making the starting 11 for them. So he's sort of, he's found his level, which clearly wasn't with us.
Was he on the bench, Cundy?
Yeah, I think the last couple of times I've looked.
He's fit then.
He's what?
He's fit then.
Yeah. Maybe he's been injured. And I'll stick with you, Ian, for the second goal, and I'll get you to talk about it as well, Mark. This Pedro, I'm going to talk about him and players that can affect. Is it affect or effect the game? Affect. This is Gary Johnsonism, wasn't it? Was it affect or effect? Anyway.
I think it's effect. But
yeah, I think it's effect.
All right, let's stick with effect.
Maybe you've got some journalists, you know, some...
Yeah, somebody can pick me up on that. Ian, I mean, Pedro cut inside. Cornick, and I think it was King, or it might have been James, were just sort of there in the background when I saw the goal at different angles. Max has got to do better with that, though, hasn't he?
Well, Zach Viner, for some reason, has dived to the floor in front of him. And I didn't see anybody near him. So I'm assuming he's trying to block the ball. And I don't know I think it bounced in front of Max. But, he should be saving that all day long. And other times this season, he has made good saves from shots like that with his feet. And because his reaction goalkeeping is good. So, but that's keepers. Keeper makes a mistake, ball goes in a net, and all of a sudden, you know, we're talking about the keeper. Outfield player makes a mistake. Sometimes somebody can come in and mop it up. So once again, it's a little bit like the fact they scored. They didn't play anything like as well as us. Didn't have anything like the amount of possession or shots, but scored two goals. Their two goals were both defensive errors. It's as simple as that. And
that's the difference. That is the difference here. It's defensive errors. Unforced errors, as opposed to the chances that went begging today, they weren't tap it wide of an open goal, were they? Yeah, maybe Pringle right at the end of the first half, he could have done better, but you know, that was just unfortunate.
Well, sometimes, you know, that's what a little bit of extra quality will give you. I mean, if you'd have probably swapped Sarr and Joao Pedro over and put them in our team instead of, with great respect to our players, then we'd have probably won 2-0.
Yeah, fine margins. Mark, you know, when you're talking about the goalkeeper, not every game, but probably since the Man City game, was it ninth game since the Man City game? We've only won 2 out of the last 9 now in the league. But, you know, do you think we'll now be looking for a number one on the basis of Bajic's not going to come from a loan to a French second division side and displace Max? And do you think Nigel would even try Wiles Richards in a game or even part of a game between now and the end of the season? So the goal and the future of Max O'Leary from your standpoint, Mark?
I think he's a little bit unlucky with the goal, but I think he can't make up his mind. I mean, he should have strong hands in front of him to be able to save the goal at his feet, because it shouldn't really go through him. So he mixes up his hand and his feet. Zach Viner, I think, does it unsight him, because he dives across his sight trying to head the ball. But we just give Joao Pedro so much time, and we back off. Cornick should be getting closer before he gets a shot away on Max. There's no real competition, is there, since Bentley's got? He's number one. Wiles Richards, you know, he hasn't played at his level. Bajic, I think the only game he's had this season against Lincoln, and I was away for that game. I don't know if I think he didn't have a great game against Lincoln.
Well, so nobody did,
He's not ready, and we'd have to see what he's like in pre-season. But I think we're going to have to sign another keeper in the summer to challenge Max. But I don't expect Wiles Richards to get any minutes unless Max gets injured between now and the end of the season.
It'd be nice to try and find another Nicky Manpar, wouldn't it? You know, is an out of contract mature player. You know, I mean, look at Fraser Forster. Who's the one who's come back in for Wrexham?
Ben Foster. Ben Foster, funnily enough, he was on loan at City. He was understudy to Steve Phillips in the early 2000s.
Was he? Really?
Yeah, I mean, we had him on loan. We had Wayne Hennessy on loan as well, and Boaz Myhill, who ended up playing Premiership football.
None of them
played in the first team. They were just brought in as backup to Steve Phillips on multiple loan deals.
Good old Flapper.
He was at Stoke at the time, I think, Ben Foster, didn't he? But yeah, he's back in at 40, saved a penalty in the last minute, gets a big hug from Ryan Reynolds. What more could you want?
I know. Ian, one of the comments on OTIB, Cornick was hauled off after 55 minutes because maybe his finger was being pointed at him by the manager for not being tight on Pedro. I think Mark's already alluded, and I've seen it, somebody put a little clip of it on Twitter, that Scott did well with a dribble out of defence, and then not long after coming on, he had a he typically won a free kick, to keep his position at the top of the most foul players in the division. But other than that little dribble and a couple of other little touches in the remaining four games that we've got, Ian, shouldn't Scott, to justify the 20 million plus price tag, should he not be influencing a game in the way that Pedro did for them? Because I recall late on in the game, very late on, Pedro got the ball on the byline, and as well as being involved in both their goals and whatnot, got the ball on the byline and sort of wiggled his way past five. And think, God, he looks a good player and he's going to be on his way. And if, if Scott's worth 20 million, well, that guy's worth a lot more. But am I wrong? It's one of my long questions here. Am I wrong, Ian, wanting to expect more of Scott in terms of being able to affect the game?
Not today, you're not. And the thing is, the kid's 19, Dave. Now, Joe Pedro's older than that, and Watford bought him for a lot of money, and Newcastle were going to buy him for about 25 million quid, and it all fell through for some reason. But I think with Alex, I'd start him against Sheffield United. There's no point in having an asset like that and not starting, whereas I wouldn't start Naismith because he looks nothing like fit. I mean, he looks, at best, I'd say 60, 70% fit. So he's going to be on the bench. Kalas and Williams won't be available for the Sheffield United game. No. They may be available for the Rotherham game, and once again, they'll both go back on the bench. I'd start him. I'd play 4-3-3 against Sheffield United, and I'd attack them because for parts of that game today, Cardiff were the better side, and they were a goal up. Now,
yes,
okay, that's what good sides do. They come back and they win games and they score goals. And what we've got to do at Sheffield United is stop them getting going. But no, I think it's unfair to compare Alex Scott at 19 to João Pedro. I mean, when I mute the mic, I'll Google how old João Pedro is and what his background is. But no, and they're different players. But I'd love to see Alex Scott. I think he should. We've said all along this season, or I've said it, I won't speak for anybody else, that he should get more goals and assists. But that's nothing different from what Alex says about himself, because you're a very mature young man, like we all are. Conway Bell, I love listening to them because they're bright kids, and they realise how lucky they are. That's what I like about them, and they're sensible.
Yeah, they've not got an edge. They've not got that. Not self-righteous, but that self-satisfied smugness that comes with certain young players that have achieved absolutely nothing in the game. Mark, it was interesting hearing Ian's view on Scott. Do you think Scott would benefit? And it's picking up on what Pullin said on the text feed on here. That's why Scott needs to stay in the Championship to improve his end product. We've got him under contract until 2025. Do you think it's feasible that somebody buys him and then loans him back to us to get another season of Championship football underneath him, or do you think somebody might buy him and then could loan him to another bigger club than us in the Championship? What do you think about that?
I don't see the point, and the teams that are likely to be able to buy Alex Scott won't want to loan him back. I mean, unless he does a does like a Jack Clark did, and you know, disappears it Spurs, and then you know, gets loaned out a few times before he eventually ends up at Sunderland. So you know, if some, you know, a top four, top five club was to do that, you know, is one for the future. But I don't think clubs have got the money to do that now, really. No. After COVID, you want players who are ready to go. So you'll be looking, you know, at a team perhaps who are going to get promoted, who've got the money. Or, you know, I'd see him being ideal at a club like Leicester City or even perhaps Brighton. Well, you know, they're great at polishing bright young things and bring him on. You've only got to look at Evan Ferguson, who's been outstanding for Brighton, now Irish centre forward. But I think with Scott, I think he would have performed better if he was able to play in that forward role, in those pockets of space, with somebody like Cal Naismith playing him in, but he hasn't been able to do that because of injuries. More often than not, he's either played out of position sometimes when he played a 3-5-2 on the right as right wing back and had to fill in there, or played at the base of midfield in a 4-2-3-1, where he's much better playing in the three as the guy, you know, as the guy in the middle. He can dribble well. I think he just lacks his shooting needs to be better, but he gets into those forward positions, and you can see, you know, he wins tackles is in half today, beating those players. That's what he's capable of doing. I want to give him every support.
He's got to do more of it.
He's going to be an enabler. He's, you know, that
he's destined for the top, we'll get
the bids. I think it'll be 20 million plus add-ons, and that will free up money that can enable us to buy, you know, four or five decent replacements, and we're not going to be spending big money.
It'll be interesting to watch that. Just sticking with you as well, Mark, Ian said about Naismith didn't look fit and his passing range was all over the shop.
It was a bit better than it was against Middlesbrough, but we're setting the bar low.
Not a lot. That was a very low bar. But it was interesting. I think it was Trevor Chalice who was doing the assistant commentating today, and Naismith hadn't
played any under 21s.
Hadn't played for the under 21s. And Chalice said, "Oh well, it's all about coming back and getting in the first team, into the group and whatnot." And you know, we're old enough to remember back in the day when, you know, if a player was injured, right, he'd play a couple of football combination games. Now, we're not in a combination now, but you're allowed to play overage players. And, you know, can you get match fit just by doing training? Would it have been better?
That made no sense whatsoever. No. With the intensity of Championship football and knowing what a key player Naismith is, I mean, because of his injuries, he's missed a lot of the season. I mean, we're told that he was going to be back in 10 days for the first one, and we didn't see him for four months because, 10 weeks plus the World Cup. And then the second one, he was going to be back or just after the international break, and then you could add another 3 weeks on top of that.
Yeah,
I think he needs to get he needs to improve his fitness. I think that would have been ideal, an under 23 fixture, which wouldn't have been as physical. Giving him a chance, you know, to get some sprints in.
Even if he played half an hour.
City need a functioning Cal Naismith because he's the best creative player we got. I mean, the only other player, I mean, Matty James has done quite well, you know, with limitations. I think he's been great at the base and midfield. But with him, I mean, him and Andy King have got a combined age of about 67, haven't you? So, you know, there's not going to be...
You're not
going to be a lot of shelf life there. Joe Williams, you know, you can't build a side round Joe Williams with his injuries. So we're going to need
fresh blood. We got him for another year.
Well, we're going to need some fresh blood there. And Ian's alluded to the fact that if you go for League One and Two players, they're not going to be better.
They're not going to have the fitness. Got.
So you've got to think that they're gonna be shopping abroad. Hopefully, you know, you bring in some. Well, we're not going to be able to bring in talent from to just League One and Two. I think that's a big risk.
It's worrying.
Well, based on our track record of bringing players through and them getting injured very quickly, I think the only player who's adapted very well, and we miss him like stink at the moment. And if you know because of his bloody ill discipline, is Mark Sykes. That would have been ideal with his running power. The last couple of games, he would have been good.
But he's stupid. He's all right. It's not all bad.
Well, no, but he's adapted well. A player, you know, who come from League One, promising. I mean, look at his body.
He's been a decent signing, all right. But he hasn't been out injured.
He's just missed seven games.
Just got himself sent off by a stupid reaction. All right, Ian.
Twice,
Ian. Mr. Vyman, today I tweeted deliberately sarcastically. I put another captain's performance. I can't believe he. He kept on the blinking pitch. I tweeted at half time, you know, get Mometi. Because when Mometi came on, he managed to get himself a yellow card and he needs to bulk up a bit and have a little bit of strength. But, you know, what did you think of Andy Vyman today, Ian? I think you said he got in the way. That was your comment on Twitter, wasn't it?
Yeah, Andy didn't have a great game today. And he had one of those games where if he needed to be at point B, he was at point A and vice versa. I wouldn't start him. I'd put him on the bench along with Cornick at Sheffield United on Tuesday because I think we're going to need to make some changes from Tuesday to Saturday because, let's be honest, Saturday is the more winnable game against Rotherham. Yeah. Just because I said that, we'll get beat 3-0.
They lost, but, didn't they? They lost 3-1 at home to Luton today, or they certainly lost them today. Yeah.
They lost. I think it was 3-0, but it doesn't matter. But they lost. I think, yeah. I mean, the point you were making about players. Well, I don't care if the players we sign are in their 30s, but they've got to play more than 30 games a season. So if you're trying to build a team, and you've got 4 to 6 players, key players, injured at all times, and you've got a squad of 23, 24, it's not going to work. So you can put Williams, James and Naismith in the 30 games a season at most club.
Yeah.
And you could probably put Andy King in that, although there is some talk about Kingy retiring, but Nigel Pearson doesn't want him to. He wants him to stay on as a player coach. And I think Andy King was as good as anybody else in midfield today, and his combination with James and his calmness did a lot to keep us on the front foot in the first half. So I'd be starting him again in midfield out of necessity on Tuesday night. And I agree with what you were saying about Cal Naismith on the Cal Naismith on the bench because he's not going to, you know, you can't start him because he's clearly not fit enough. Or if you start him, you're going to have to get him off at halftime.
Yeah, which might be better to start him and take him off or have him or bring him rather than bring him on as a sub. Let's say you had him and he came on after 40 minutes and then broke and he came on as a sub for somebody after 40 minutes. You're better off saying, right, go out and play. And then, you know, we'll take you off at halftime anyway. What you don't want is to bring somebody like him on who something happens to him with 10 minutes to go and you're hanging on to a 1-1 draw or something like that. But okay. So Sheffield United Tuesday night, that's not going to be easy up there. But, you know, you never know. But our best chance of winning a game, as you said, Ian, is against Rotherham next week. Mark, there's some people on the line feed. Steve has said, we aren't buying ourselves into the top six. However, the Premier League dreamers hope we do. We need to build from a plan and culture, which is what we are doing, and with a very good man to do it. I said before we went live, looking at next season and looking at the fact that there are certain clubs in that top six now, Luton, Coventry and Millwall. If we can't emulate them next season, right, and that means getting into the playoffs or in the top eight, and you might be in the playoffs one week and then drop out. Yeah, but if you look at teams 7 and 8, they're not parachute clubs. Then the next three are the teams that got relegated last season, if I've got that correct. But Mark, do you think I'm being a glory hunter by saying, you know, we must be at the very least in the top eight next season? Otherwise it's failure.
Well, we've got to be a lot higher at the league. I mean, you can't just say, complain about, you know, teams relegated from the Premier League when you've got, you know, the likes of Norwich and Watford who aren't even in the top six at the moment. West Brom not in the top six, although all three sides have still got a chance of getting sixth place. They're not there. And with the wage bill, Luton's is a lot lower than ours. Millwall's got to be comparable. Coventry's got to be lower with their problems. Preston certainly is going to be lower or similar, and Blackburn as well. And they're all competing, for the playoffs. So based on based on our wage bill and some of the players that we've had available, we should be doing better. But I mean, it's going to be all change next season because players will be leaving. Masengo, Callas, De Silva, possibly some of the youngsters.
And Taylor Moore as well.
Forgot about Taylor Moore. Perhaps possibly on your Edwards, who's been at Ross County, probably forgotten all about him as well. So, you know, it's going to be, we just don't know. We're going to have to start again. With lots of replacements post Alex Scott. The problem we had this season is that apart from those first eight games, we just can't score. We our goal scoring is very poor. You know, we scored 48 goals, 16 of those were in the first eight games. You know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist. Where we have improved is the fact that we've only conceded 52 goals and we ended up conceding, I've said this
70
last, podcast,
last season, wasn't
we
it?
Conceded 77. So I think the change to a back four, and that it's been fairly settled, has seen an improvement there, especially since the West Brom game where we're probably earning, I think it was up to the Middlesbrough game, I worked out it was like 1.64 as opposed to something like 1.1. So there's been a vast improvement, and we've been unbeaten at home since the West Brom game, but we haven't troubled
well,
the top six apart
year.
From that
yeah.
early
unbeaten
stage.
Unbeaten at we've home only, this year,
but we've only won eight games. We've got to improve our home form. You're going to have to have 11, 12 wins, you know, to get into the top six.
Well, you've got to win 20 plus. You got to win.
Yeah, but with the sides that are there, Dave, you can't, you know, when you've got the likes of Coventry, Millwall and Luton at the moment in the top
and
six.
And Preston.
Preston are eighth, but they're, you know, they're level on points. Luton will finish third or fourth. Coventry have got a chance, you know, good young manager in Mark Robbins, lots to admire there. Blackburn changed Tony Mowbray and went for Jan Dahl Thomason. If their home form hasn't been off a cliff, they've lost several games at home this season. They would have been.
They'd still be up there challenging
for the top two. But we should be doing better. But we've got to start all over again because there's going to be about five, six, seven departures, and we've just got to hope that the recruitment's better because it hasn't been these last few seasons. So Vincent Kompany was told, obviously they had the money, but he was given a 3-year plan. He had to change the way the team had played. He's wheeled and dealed, brought in some bargains, and they're actually playing football. There's hope for us all, isn't there? So let's hope some of recruitment's better.
Ian, you know, people are getting their excuse. I mean, You're not one to give excuses. None of us are. We don't give excuses. We just want success in some shape or form. And Ian, you said we need a squad of 28 because that's two lots of 11 and six to carry off the injuries. Well, bloody Luton, none of those sides have got squads of 28 players. So is there an intrinsic problem with us and injuries? I mean, it's like we said this before. We seem as though we're the only club that suffered. You know, we read certain things. Oh, we're the only club that have suffered problems linked to COVID. Yeah. Do we have a right to expect more?
Well, we brought Dave Rennie in, and he's improved it from where we were under Andy Rowles, because at one point in the Holden Pearson season, which is Nigel Pearson's first bit of a season, we had 21 players injured. So it's better than that. But you can't have both. You can't have long-term injuries. And lots of teams get long-term injuries. I mean, Watford have suffered from long-term injuries. They're back. Just to confirm on João Pedro, Watford bought him for 30 million and he's 21. So Scott's got a couple of years to go to catch up on him.
Okay.
If you've got to do one thing here, if you could say, right, yeah, we're going to stop getting injuries and everybody's going to be an ever-present, and that absolutely never happens, so that's Fantasy Island, so let's throw that away.
It did, though, back in 76, didn't it? I think six were ever-presents in that team, weren't they?
Different world, Dave, of different course. World.
Yeah, history. Definitely.
Looking back and saying, look, in the Roman times, the life expectancy was 25 or something. It's a different world now. And football's different. Well, you know, you're not going to get players now saying, well, look, you'll have to go out there and play. We'll whack a cortisone injection in your knee. And then the bloke's 45, 50 years old, and he looks about 65, and he's walking on sticks. So, but look, those days are gone, thank God. If we've got players where we're going to have problems with injuries, and we know it, and it's... What's happening? Somebody's shuffling paper or something.
Yeah, that's me doing it.
well, put your mic on mute then.
Play his Joker.
No, look, I think if you've got that, so if you say, well, we can't cure that, so we need more players. Now, I'm going to ask Brian Tinian this when we see him next week. I'm going to ask him what's going to happen to make the squad stronger and better. Because he might say, well, look, we're only going to sign four if Scotty goes, which is what he said on to Jeff Twentyman.
Yeah.
Because we've got three lads coming through in addition to the ones we've got from the under-21s, and they're going to be well capable of playing 10 or 15 games a season. And everybody's got a different idea. I mean, pulling one here said we need about seven. There's a guy on Twitter called Ginger HQ, and he says we need 10. So I think it depends. That's when people say, well, how do you think we'll do next season? I said, well, let's see what the squad is in August, September.
Yeah.
Because don't forget, the transfer window doesn't shut until September the 1st. So let's see who's here then, because that's who you've got, barring signing free agents. That's who you've got. Until the 1st of January. Yeah. So you've got to crack on with it. But I do think one of the things that we can do is loans. And if you look at the clubs at the top of this division, look at Middlesbrough, that lad Ramsey.
Jacob Ramsey, yeah, he was actually.
And Archer as well.
Yeah.
And Archer.
Yeah, bring off the bench.
You know, they're absolutely exceptional players, but
more than a couple today, Watford, didn't they? But our manager doesn't like to do that. And Ian, I'll ask you a quick question.
Before I forget to say it, we may not be able to afford players from Aston Villa squad. That could be a reason for it. So Pearson might be saying, well, look, I don't want Aston Villa's fourth choice under 21 midfield.
No.
I want a player who's who is going to improve the squad. And if he looks at these other players, think, well, he's no better than Tommy Conway, Harry Leeson, or any of the younger lads, then I totally agree you shouldn't bring them in. But if you can bring in one or two, and the money from Scott might give us the ability to do it and stay within a budget, then I think we should, because, you know, if we brought in another Tammy Abraham up front, what a difference that could make. And we're only, it's not like we're going to miss the playoffs by 30 points. We're going to, in the end of the season, we're going to miss them by about, 10. I don't know, 10,
yeah.
Something like that.
15.
So
15.
It depends on how many games we win, but because it'd be the most City thing in the world to lose to Rotherham and beat Burnley. Oh. But being realistic, yeah. So you in one way, you can, Nigel Pearson said himself, we're a long way from where I want us to be. But then during this week, he said, when you look, there's only a 9-point gap. So we're not that far away. So he seems to be coming round to thinking more positively about where the squad is. And I think a lot of that is the younger players.
Yeah. No, I mean, I just wonder whether, Mark, I don't know what your view is on this, because Ian's often said, and it's fact, that players, Brian Tinian's hinted that players they want to buy coming out from League One, League Two, that have played 200 games, yeah, they struggle to get up to the fitness. Personally, I would sooner see us blood more youngsters that will have a required level of fitness and have them as backups to some better quality players, because we're doing the usual thing at Bristol City. You know, we're signing 8 players at $5,000 a week rather than 4 players at $10,000 a week and having good youngsters, of which there does appear to be a plentiful supply coming through in all areas of the pitch. Yeah. Mm. Do you think this buying lower down is a good idea? And a question that I'll ask Brian, and it's not that we've got this special access to Brian Tinian. Brian Tinian is speaker this week at the Senior Reds lunch on Thursday. But I'm going to ask Brian, is he going to rule out any overseas signings? So, Mark, for you, better to promote youngsters and buy quality than, and also, do you see us going abroad? Ian alluded to it earlier, but what do you think on those two points?
I think it's risky bringing in players, a lot of players from League One and Two. Like I said, especially if you look at our track record in the last couple of seasons of injuries and bringing through George, you know, Tanners and Kane Wilson's. They both had long injuries during the season, which doesn't back it up. And Kane Wilson, you know, was the League Two's Player of the Year. He really thought that this was a chance for him to shine. After an outstanding season at Forest Green, and it just didn't happen. Mark Sykes has probably been the best of the crop, but I think it goes to, do we want to get loan players in? Every other club has done it, but you've got to have money. I think you'd be looking for the loaning club to subsidise you to some extent, but then, of course, there's got to be an agreement for that. So it would mean a change of policy for City, because if you wouldn't be looking for just one player, you might be looking for two or three that City would need really to make a difference. Yeah. Do they do that over the players that they're bringing through? Are they going to be strong enough? I mean, this season we've been very lucky because we've had one breakout star in Tommy Conway. We've had two with Sam Bell. But yeah, it's midfield.
I thought Sam did really well today.
But it's midfield where we got a problem because we haven't, we really need, I think we need two or three bodies in there.
All right.
Plus we need a couple of centre forwards because, Andy Fineman had his outstanding season last season.
I think come August, we're going to be sat there and we'll probably end up, we won't have the 28 that Ian says we need, but we'll be sat there with 22. And it'll be like the England team will forever be arguing about what is the best 11 and what is the best formation, because they're all
we need somebody we need somebody physical like a Chris Martin, who can also hold the ball up, and you know,
well, if we're playing
a 4-2-3-1, you need that player who could hold the ball up and those three to come in behind, because we have got genuine
we're going to have a lot of players next season. It's not going to be the 28 that.
But you don't want bums on seats. If you buy players and leave one on
two. Lads, please don't both talk at the same time, because
we're trying to talk. You know, we've had in the last few seasons, we've taken a punt on the likes of Issa and Adelakan. Did poorly. Sammy Smodics didn't do well for us. He went backwards again, did well at Peterborough. I think he's had injuries at Blackburn. Maybe he's suffering from the transition into the Championship, but he did very well, having gone backwards to earn a very good transfer deal there. But our record, taking a chance on players in League One and Two isn't good. Maybe a couple of young gems, yes. But buying three or four, I think that's a, that's very risky. What do you think, Ian?
If we sign Sorry, you're going on so long there, Mark. I lost track of what you were saying. Do you think we'll? I think we need to sign, depending on who goes. If those three go out the door, I think we'll need at least six to make the squad bigger or stronger. Now, whether they're perms or loans, whether they're British or foreign, honestly, couldn't care less. It's the quality, not the nationality, not the age, not the height, not the weight. And we've got to sign them in the right positions. We need at least two centre backs, because don't forget, Atco's not going to be back in contention until
October, probably.
Yeah. Could be longer. Because when did we play Sunderland? And he did his
January.
Right, now he wouldn't have had the operation until February. So what have you got then? You've got
6 months, March, August. April. It's October. It's October.
Yeah, it's probably going to be October before he's back. So, I much prefer Cam bring it left back. You need to play there because it looks very much like Jay's leaving. So you need to bring in the players. But my fear, if we don't bring in Premier loans, is on quality, because I can't see how the quality is going to be as good as an 8 million centre half. Admittedly, you know, you might say, well, if we bring a lad in from League One, at least he might play a few games. But that's not fair. So you've got 8 million centre half, a 25 million midfield player,
and a £3 million fullback. Yeah, no, you're right. And,
you know, how are they going to? I just don't see how they're going to improve the quality or the depth. If it's all right, you might improve the depth by one, but that ain't the kind of improvement it needs. With either that or cure all the injuries, but that is just impossible.
Yeah. No, okay, look, we're talking about quality and stuff like that. It's been announced, or he announced it himself this week, that a legend of local radio, Jeff Twentyman, is leaving. He's retiring, I think. Mark, you've probably had as much to do. I've met Jeff several times, but you've probably met him more than me, Mark. I mean, he has been a beacon of consistency, impartiality. He asks the tough questions a lot of the time when he's interviewed the likes of Mark Ashton and stuff like that. I mean, is Jeff going symptomatic of, you know, maybe BBC cutbacks? Are we going to have the same level of coverage? And your words on Jeff as well, because he's a legend in this field.
Yeah, I mean, impartial, absolutely outstanding. I mean, I think I first spoke with him in 1999, and he's been put up with me ever since. I was lucky enough to be my sister's best man at my sister's wedding, because her ex-husband's best man dropped out, and I suddenly had this whim one lunchtime. Why didn't I ask Jeff to record a message? He duly recorded it on cassette, and we played that in 2000, you know, with recorded intro music, you know, the top of the show music. He did a speech. There were some highlights from our auto windscreens game against semi-final against Exeter, you know, the season we lost to Stoke.
Yeah.
And I would say that he's been the best supporter in that capacity of West Country sport in the last 30 years. He is that good. But I think it's somebody called The Journalist, I think, posted this on OTIB, that it's because he works in the studio and he's like the link. He's not somebody who's commentating on the game. It's maybe endemic of something that the BBC, you know, that type of role is disappearing, you know, from live radio. But he's made such a contribution. Wonderful friend to West Country sport. Gives, you know, regardless of whether it's Yeovil, City Rovers, Bristol Bears, Bath Rugby, equal airtime, and we're very lucky at regional radio that people can get airtime and talk passionately about their local club, because we've got enough plastic fans walking around Bristol. And we're able to talk passionately about our club, and he will patiently listen and give you the chance to put your view across.
I
hope his successor gives that chance, but we won't see that.
I don't know whether, you know, you talk about his successor. There will never be another Jeff. I'm reading between the lines. I think the BBC are looking to save money as well. So the level of coverage that we get I'll be interested to see what that looks like next season. Ian, what are your memories and thoughts of Jeff? I mean, you're a regular on his show and whatnot, but you know, end of an era, really, isn't it? Yeah,
it is the end of an era, and I would agree with Mark. The interesting thing will be to see if he's replaced, because if he's not replaced, I would think you get somebody like Richard Redd would do the Sound of the City program. You don't need an editor of sport to do that program. But whether he's replaced at all it will be the interesting thing, because they are making a lot of cutbacks at the BBC and in local radio in particular. So, and it'll be a great shame if it goes away, because a lot of people, they're not computer savvy, they're not phone savvy, and Radio Bristol is their only outlet for listening to the games if they can't go. And that applies to a lot of people that work on a Saturday, or older people, that they rely on it. It's their link, and it gives them still some connection to the club. And I think that'll be the interesting thing for me. I mean, obviously, Jeff retiring, I know he's a keen golfer. I know he wants to get up and watch Liverpool and a few other things he wants to do. And he wants to spend time with his family like we all do. So I wish him the best of luck. He was always unbiased. We've had our run-ins at times over the years, but in fairness, when he was wrong a couple of times about took what I said the wrong way, he was gracious enough to ring up and apologise, and vice versa. So, you know, I wish him all the best. And I hope it all goes. Well for him. But you never know. He might do a Neil Warnock and make a comeback.
You never know.
I'll tell you what. You never know. He might come on our program if we asked him nicely. You never know.
Well, he might.
Funny things might have happened, David. There we are.
Yeah, he could take over from me. He could take over from me doing this. I brought somebody in this week. Yeah, you'll know. He'll do well. Yeah, no, he will be. I mean, you know, we're old enough to remember, as I'm sure a lot of people listening now, you know, Roger Malone, and then used to be Peter Godsiff. I mean, Richard Latham, same age as me, and Graham Russell, David Foote, all the journalists. And it's all changing. It is literally all changing now. And, you know, local stuff. I mean, what we're doing here, you know, the fact that we're able to do this live, anybody can do what we do, you know, it's dead easy to put out content, I think is a word that people in the media use, you know. And we'll miss Jeff. And I say his last programme, which is A Sound of the City, is May the 22nd.
So yeah, I mean, it's almost like, I mean, it's, you know, you've watched Jeff Stennon on Sucker Saturday. It's almost like being a conductor and you've got to hold it all together. Yeah, you know, whilst you're doing all of those links, you're doing links to all the grounds, plus you're bringing in, you're bringing in feeds from Radio 5 Live. So it's a hell of a job. You know, the pressure must be immense.
It's bad enough dealing with four of you when we do this sometimes. I mean, when it's just the three of us, it's
nice to you, David.
And we got the little text feeds on here as well. But look, that's been good. Okay, well, look, it's time to wrap up.
Play just for today.
Stop play for today. I am hopeful that my fire alarm, because I've taken the battery out totally, it's not going to be throwing a fit. But I think that was my drama this weekend, and we'll be doing our stuff on the Sheffield United game on Wednesday morning at 9:30 for those who want to listen. But Ian, Mark, thank you as always for your contribution. Everybody who's listened, and we'll look forward to seeing you all next time or speaking with you. We don't see you, do we? So have a good few days until the next time, and I hope you enjoy listening to this episode. All the best.
Take care, everybody. Thank you very much for listening, and here's to 3 points at Bramall Lane. Ever the optimist.
All right. Cheers, guys. Bye. Bye. Bye-bye. There's a time I always feel happy as a king, when the red robin comes bobbing along. There'll be no more sobbing when he stops throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up.
cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When red robins are bubbing along. Red robin come bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red robin starts bobbing along.